case number 20-2278 and case number 21-1004, Kenneth Nathan versus Feiger and Feiger PC. Oral argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Robert Kamenick for the appeal.
Counsel, before you proceed, just one second. Can you let me know how much time you want for a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. 3 minutes.
3 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. That's great. And then I do want to thank the staff for making this so seamless. So, Robin, I hope you'll, on behalf of the panel, tell everyone how appreciative we are for you all making it very easy on the judges and the lawyers. It took a lot of work on your behalf to make our lives easy, and we greatly appreciate it. I also want to say what a beautiful courthouse and city this is, and we're glad to be here and honored to be here. And so you may proceed, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, for the record, Robert Kamenick, I represent the defendant appellant here. 3 minutes for rebuttal. On the appeal, there's just a single issue, and that is whether or not the district court erred when remanding an arbitration decision that said respondent is liable, that's all it said, for a clarification under the third exception to the doctrine of functus officio under the Green case. And the district court believed that the phrase respondent is liable, and there's other language in the original award, but it basically just recites that the witnesses were called and the like. The district court judge, Judge Drain, felt that the award was capable of clarification. On appeal,
agree that that's all that happened was clarification on remand to the arbitrator.
No, I do not agree that all they did is clarify.
What occurred other than clarification? What can you point to that changed?
Well, what changed is that you had I'd like to say in the brief, a redo of the decision of the arbitrators, but it was actually more than that. It was a first do. So first.
Why is it a redo versus just simply explaining the reasons? Because it didn't come out with a different result. Nothing changed.
But it, Your Honor, if I may, it's not just the result. The fact of the matter is the arbitrators had to revisit the merits. You could not come up with a 9-page opinion without revisiting the merits, especially with respect to...
Why? If I decide something, I mean, I could say affirmed or reversed, and I know the reasons I did it. I don't have to explain it. We often will have one paragraph or three paragraph opinions. We could do it in 30 pages. So what's the difference? You ask for clarification, we give you 30 pages. It's the 30 pages the three of us discussed, but we just didn't put in writing.
Well, two responses. Number one, it's not a clarification. I must stress that. Nobody is clarifying what is meant by the words respondent is liable. That is clear as a bell. It is actually filling in the decision that was never made in the first instance. And the second point, to answer your question directly, Your Honor, is that you are a judge. You have the imprimatur of judicial impartiality. You have been sworn into an office. It is, as we've explained in the brief, it's similar to a remand to a district court on a judge try case where you have that judicial integrity and you can rely on that judicial integrity.
But you all chose arbitrators and they have integrity, and this whole functus officio, as just Judge Posner said, I mean, it's a judicial creation, whereas we have arbitration that's a standard. And it seems to me if you get rid of the ability to remand, then you're going to be reinventing the wheel every time, just as a practical matter. And the Green case pretty clearly lays out that we can remand. Judges can remand to arbitrators.
There's no doubt that judges have the power to remand to arbitrators, but functus officio applies. It was rendered in a decision in 2021 by another circuit. It's never been discarded by this circuit, and it has defined parameters. It is the default mechanism to make sure that arbitrators do not revisit the merits, especially when the arbitrators no longer have the power to act. They don't have jurisdiction, to use the analogy, Your Honor. They don't have jurisdiction. The agreement...
Shouldn't we read it narrowly since it's a judicially created doctrine and arbitration wasn't a big deal when it was created and now it is? And arbitration's pretty clearly laid out. I mean, they could have put this exception in. Congress could put it in the Federal Arbitration Act, but we don't. So why shouldn't we read it narrowly, as Judge Posner suggested?
Well, Judge Posner, I believe, in that case, was talking about a labor arbitration to begin with. I'm not positive, which is different. It's a different nature. There's a federal policy.
But the doctrine, the judge made doctrines the same, right?
But it's applied in a different context. Two parties with a private arbitration can provide, as happened in the case of this court on Sterling. You can actually provide for the fact that the arbitrator retains power after the decision is rendered. It happens in arbitration agreements quite often. It did not happen here. Matter of fact, it's pretty clear under paragraphs 13 and 15 that once the decision was rendered, the arbitrators were discharged. They were gone. So if the parties wanted to do exactly what you say, Your Honor, they could have done it in the contract, and they didn't do it.
How do you distinguish the Green case from this one?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't
hear. The Green case, there was a remand for clarification. How do you distinguish that case from this one?
In Green case, you had, in the first instance, you had a decision. I believe it was six paragraphs long. It was an age discrimination case.
But wasn't that the case where they just laid out the plaintiffs' and defendants' arguments and then said one side wins?
No. I think they said a little bit more.
That Posner's case, I can't remember the distinction.
It's not Posner's case.
I'm saying my recitation of the facts. I couldn't remember if that was Posner's case or the Green case.
So
Go ahead.
How do you distinguish Green from this case?
Six-page opinion set forth the claims of age and race discrimination. There was a description of the defendant's corporate processes. The arbitrators found on each theory that the burden of proof was not carried. And the court found that that was sufficient for a clarification.
Okay, so we said in Green that the arbitrator merely announced his decision with respect to each one of the plaintiff's theories. And that was insufficient, so they remanded. Why is that any different? I'm sorry.
Because here you don't have the theories outlined. You don't, with the original award, Your Honor. All you have is respondent is liable. You have nothing. You don't even have the framework.
But we didn't say that was critical in Green. What we said is that we're quoting the district court, he merely announced his decision with respect to each theory.
But there was justification for the decision, and there's none here.
In Green, did he actually remand, or did the court just say it would have been okay if they remanded? Because I thought in Green they found that the arbitrator said enough.
That is correct, Your Honor. The second point you made is correct. In that sense, arguably, it's dicta. Yeah. And if I may follow up on this theme that the court is asking me about, if respondent is liable or a mere finding such as that is sufficient for clarification, if it is, then what's happening is that the exception just swallowed the rule of functus officio. It's gone. Now, if the court is of a mind to set precedent and go ahead and say that functus officio no longer applies to private arbitration, that's one thing. That has not been argued. And this court is, to the best of my knowledge, would be the first circuit court that ever said that. But otherwise, what you have is you have the third exception swallowing the rule. And there's a couple reasons why. Number one, as we've already talked about, and I won't belabor it, you can't clarify those three words. Number two, embedded in the third exception is that there has to be an ambiguity.
So we have to buy your number one, that you can't clarify respondent is liable? If we don't buy that you can't clarify that. In other words, if I said the plaintiff wins, the question is, can I clarify that? And what you're saying is you can't clarify that, Judge. There's no way to clarify it.
If I could put an exclamation point on that, Your Honor. I'm saying that the existing law says that the only time that you can clarify an award is when there's an ambiguity. And there's no ambiguity with respect
to... Why? if I said, I ate at Barrio last night, a good Cleveland restaurant, if I said, Barrio is great, okay, you wouldn't know why. There's ambiguity. It could be because the servers are great. It could be because the margaritas were great. It could be because the tacos were great. It could be any of those things. It could be because they were nice. So it's Barrio is great is ambiguous on its face in the sense you don't know why. That's the same thing here. Respondent is liable. Why? Okay, now we're going to tell you.
Respectfully, I disagree.
Explain why.
I'll explain why, because, and I'll use an analogy to make the point. Insurance coverage case. When you're talking about an insurance provision, there, if you want to have an ambiguity, there has to be two reasonable interpretations. And the food is great is not an interpretation. It's not susceptible to two reasonable conflicting interpretations. Thus, there is no ambiguity, and thus, there is no basis to clarify under Green.
Counsel, is
it an interpretation? Respondent is liable for reason A. Respondent is liable for reason B, or A, B, sub C, the way lawyers do. It's ambiguous in that sense, isn't it?
I don't think the law contemplates that an ambiguity is just win or lose, that it has to be something more that's embedded in the decision. I don't know if that answers your, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't know if that answers your question.
I have a different question. I'd always thought under for arbitration awards that there needed to be a showing of fraud, corruption, or misbehavior by the arbitrator to set aside the award. And this functus officio doctrine doesn't seem to contemplate that as being required. Is that your position?
Yes, because functus officio, it is, Your Honor, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And because functus officio works off the notion that the arbitrators don't have authority or power when they act on remand.
Okay. So suppose we rule against you on the functus officio. Are you dead in the water, or do you have any evidence of fraud, corruption, or misbehavior?
No, I think this appeal comes down to the functus officio question.
Okay, thank you.
Can I go back to my question? So if we don't buy, respondent is liable, do you lose being ambiguous or not ambiguous? Do you lose?
Well, there are two prongs to that, clarification and ambiguous, just to be clear, Your Honor.
Right.
And if functus officio doesn't apply, I'm trying to answer your question. If functus officio, for whatever reason, doesn't apply, then I think that this court would likely affirm.
Yeah, but that was the answer to Judge Bush. I'm asking a subpart of that, which is you're saying we have to buy in that remanding is reinventing the wheel versus clarifying an ambiguity, correct?
It's revisiting the merits. To be precise.
Okay, revisiting the merits.
Right. Correct.
And your point is we have to agree with that for you to win.
Yes.
Okay.
And if I may, I notice my time is up. I tried to look this up, but as far as I can see, to establish the exceptions to functus officio should be the burden of the party proposing the exceptions here, the plaintiff.
Okay, just before you sit down, do you have a case for that? You said
I don't, Your Honor. I looked last night and yesterday, so I'm leaving it as an issue, but it seems to make common sense.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Did you have any more questions?
No.
John.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honors. Bob Tyler on behalf of the appellee and cross-appellant, the trustee of the bankruptcy estate. This is a very simple claim as opposed to something of interpreting insurance contracts and those kind of things. As the court knows from the facts of this, it's very simple. There was an employment agreement that said that if you bring a case into the Figer law firm, you're entitled to a certain percentage of the eventual recovery. We then agreed to go to arbitration. There was a mutually agreed upon arbitration agreement that required the arbitration panel to do one thing, to come to a brief reasoned decision. There was nothing in the arbitration agreement.
There's nothing reasoned in this. Respondent is liable. What's reasoned about that?
Well, it is reasoned about that from the standpoint that they sat through almost a week-long arbitration trial and then came to a decision, just as you gave the example, Your Honor, that you may do a one-line decision.
I get that, but there's nothing, we think of holdings in reasoning. There's nothing reasoned about respondent as liable.
The main point that I submit this court should take from that brief reasoned decision is one, before it was clarified, the parties agreed to what was asked for, and they never asked the panel to provide proposed findings of facts, conclusions of law, any of those things.
But they asked for a brief reasoned decision.
They did.
You would think there would be reasoning in that and not just a brief. They didn't say a brief decision or a decision. They said a reasoned decision.
That is correct, Your Honor, obviously. And what happened here in the end was that Judge Drain agreed with what the concept that you're putting forth, Your Honor, said we need more reasoning here. Tell us what the reasoning was. We need a clarification, which, as I believe Your Honors have pointed out, that's exactly what happened in Green. Although the facts are different, Green, this court said, here's what should happen. If there is any ambiguity in a decision, you don't remand it to a new arbitrator.
Okay, now I'm mixing the cases up, but isn't Green, in Green, didn't they have a process, a more of a process? A, they had more in the decision, and B, I thought there was some agreement that they could remand in that case.
There was, the decision was obviously longer than this decision, but when that district court judge in that case said, I'm going to remand the case, but I'm not going to remand it to the same arbitrator. I'm going to remand it to a different arbitrator and basically start over. This court, in looking at that, said, no, one, we disagree with the district court's opinion because the arbitrator did lay out various reasons for his decision. But if we were to accept that opinion was ambiguous and needed clarification, the rule is, the way it should be handled, is that it should be remanded back to the same arbitrator for direction that he should clarify his decision. And that is exactly what Judge Drain did in this situation.
Let me ask you about something else, though. I mean, wasn't there some new arguments made on the remand from the original proceeding, in particular with regard to calculation of interest? Wasn't there some additional argument put forth?
It's a twofold answer, if I may, Your Honor.
Okay.
There was no new evidence that was introduced to the panel as far as evidence. The arbitration trial was not reopened. It was not reintroduced. What the court is, what Your Honor is referring to with respect to the interest, during the arbitration trial, I'm the one that tried the case. During the arbitration trial, we put forth the interest calculation because, as this court knows, in Michigan, the prevailing party is entitled to interest on a judgment. We provided the calculation to the panel. During the trial, the defendant, Figer Law Firm, never proposed any alternative to that interest calculation. They objected for a variety of reasons, but they never said during the trial, that number's wrong, it should be X. What they did do, as Your Honor has recalled, is during the process when it went back to Judge Drain, they came up with innumerable arguments, allegations of misconduct, et cetera, and one of the things that they raised was the interest calculation was incorrect. Plaintiff said it should have been X. We now, after the trial, say it should have been Y. Judge Drain rejected that argument, as he rejected all of these other specious arguments about wrongdoing by the panel and ex parte communications.
But how is it a clarification if you're adding prejudgment interest to it?
that was in the original decision by the panel. When they made their...
I thought on remand they added more prejudgment interest.
Only the interest that transpired during the ensuing days and weeks. They did not change their calculation. They simply said that when we rendered our decision...
Because the original was a fixed amount and thereafter until satisfied, so
that's,
it that's had
correct,
to keep right. running.
That's correct.
So you just quantified that additional amount
that's
for, the,
right.
for the remand.
Right.
So your position is that it was the Figer firm that, to the extent there was any new argument, it was the Figer firm that raised it on remand that they had not raised earlier, and you were responding to that argument.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I would also point out, as the court knows in the briefs, when the panel, I had originally asked the panel if they wanted, when Judge Drain remanded it back for clarification, if the panel wanted proposed findings of fact, because as this court well knows, many times courts, arbitrators will ask the litigants for proposed findings of fact. I asked the panel if they wanted it. I sent a copy to the defendant, so it was not ex parte. At that point, the panel said to all sides, yes, if you want to file it. The Figer Law Firm never, during the time that the panel had the case, provided any proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law, et cetera, et cetera. But then, they then continued to complain about it. Frankly, Your Honors, the only reason that we are here today is the fact that the Figer Law Firm lost, and they're unhappy about it. And that's understandable. None of us want to lose anything, and we'll be unhappy. But the fact is, the Green case is right on point with respect to the law, what should happen in an arbitration. If there is any ambiguity, it goes back on remand to the arbitrators, and they are then asked to clarify their opinion. And that's exactly what they did. And when they did write the second opinion, they didn't change their decision. They didn't change anything about what they had decided. They simply did what Judge Drain had directed them to do, and that was to provide the reasoning for how they came to their conclusion.
And all the reasoning came from proposed findings from your client, correct?
They did not. Interestingly enough, because I sat down and put the clarified decision next to the proposed findings of fact, and they are similar, obviously, in some ways, because you know we had a view of what the evidence showed, but they were not identical. This was not in any stretch of the imagination where the panel took our proposed findings of fact and signed their signatures to it. They are different in a number of ways. And I can assure this court, if that's what happened, if the panel just rubber-stamped our proposed findings of fact, you would have heard about that over and over again in the briefs, and Mr. Kamenek would have over and over again this morning brought that to your attention. So what happened here when you review the proposed findings of fact and you look at the clarified decision, the panel went back and looked at the evidence that had been presented and came to their own reasoning. And some of it obviously is consistent with our proposed findings of fact, such as there was an employment agreement with the lawyer that he would receive a certain percentage if he brought a file in. But they addressed witnesses who said X and witnesses that said Y, and not they just don't. They don't lock up verbatim step for step.
Can we turn to your cross appeal?
Yes, Your Honor. This, as the court knows from Citizens Insurance and from the Head versus Phillips, if you take a check and that part of that check belongs to somebody else and you deposit it and you do not give back to the other person the amount.
Can I take a step back from that? Do you need a duty beyond the contractual duty to support your conversion claim?
The contractual claim and the conversion claim can coexist separately.
Do you need a separate duty?
It would be a separate duty, and the duty would be that you don't hold on to funds that are belong to somebody else. That is a separate duty from the breach of contract. Yes, Your Honor.
Where does that duty come from?
Well, the Citizens case talked about it, the Head case talked about it. It comes from the conversion law that says, and the conversion statute.
Are you talking common law or statutory?
Both. It says that if you are holding funds or property that belongs to somebody else, and you do not then provide that to the person who has a right to it, you have converted that property.
In Citizens, didn't the check come from the other party?
In Citizens, the check came from a third party, and then the converter held it. Did
you
not
say it came from a third party? I thought it came from the person who wanted the money. He was going to cash the check, and then you give me back my share.
I think the court is correct. Yes.
Okay, which is different here because the check came from elsewhere. The direct analogy to Citizens would have been if the check came from Romanzi and then Figer didn't give him back his money out of that. Here you have a check from a third party, and the question is under what circumstances does Romanzi have a right to that? Let me ask one further thing, though.
Sure.
Assuming that you win on the arbitration appeal, Romanzi's already gotten his money, correct?
No, he does not have his money.
Well, I mean, he will have his money.
Yes.
Will have the so that he would have
actually
the same thing he would get from common law conversion. You want statutory conversion so you can get treble damages.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But if all you're entitled to is common law conversion, you've already got that same amount.
Assuming as the court
assuming
has
this,
indicated
yeah, he gets
that
paid.
You decide in our favor. Yes, Your Honor, you're
okay,
correct.
Okay, that's fine.
Now, my reading of the statutory conversion is that you have to show that the defendant put the converted property to the defendant's own use. That's one of the elements.
Yes.
So what proof do you have that Figer put the money to its own use?
Well, because the summary judgment was decided by the bankruptcy court before the case made it to Judge Drain, we were not allowed discovery on that issue. But that money has not, we have no evidence that the money has been segregated, placed any place separately.
No, you have the burden, though, to show that the defendant put the property to its own use. Isn't that your burden to prove through evidence at summary judgment?
Well, according to 629.19a, it talks about possessing as well. And obviously the Figer law firm has possessed all of the
money.
But
you concede its own use is one of the elements, right?
Its own use is one of the elements. And
is your contention the fact that the firm put the money into an account, that's enough to show own use?
The fact that it's been in an account for years, yes. But
if the firm did not ever use the money for anything, even if it's just an escrow account, that would be considered own use?
Well, I would submit to the court if that is a troubling issue for the court, then what should happen on remand is that...
Wait, why should there be a remand if you haven't put evidence forward of own use?
Because summary judgment was granted against us before we had an opportunity to take any discovery on that issue.
Did you ask for discovery on that issue before the bankruptcy judge?
The issue of discovery on that never came up because of the summary judgments that were put forth in the bankruptcy court on a number of issues.
Wait, can I ask a question? Does the bankruptcy court have, I think it's a 56F, they change it, procedure where you can respond to a summary judgment and say, I need discovery on this before I can respond?
I'm sorry, does the court ask me if they...
Do they have that procedure and did you follow it?
They do have discovery in the bankruptcy court.
No. The procedure, you know the rules of summary judgment,
right?
The rule where you put forward an affidavit and say, before I can respond to this, I need discovery on X.
Well, the best way I can answer that is during the argument, Your Honor, the Figer law firm indicated, because one of the things we had asked for was a bond for security, and the Figer law firm indicated we are collectible, we do not have to put forth a bond. But I will grant the court that it is an unknown issue exactly where that money went. And the point I was trying to make is, if that is troubling to this court, then
all right, we understand. Then
we should have an opportunity to go back.
We understand, counsel. Do you have any more questions, Judge Boggs?
No.
If I could make one last point, Your Honor.
One last point.
Thank you.
It's got to be quick.
It will be quick. The Figer law firm in the case where they sued the law firm for not paying them a referral fee on a case that they had referred to them, which we referenced in our brief, that is exactly the same circumstances we have here. In that case, they claim conversion. So I submit to the court, it is a little bit a lack of credibility here that they now come in and say to this court, this isn't conversion, when they filed a lawsuit in court in Michigan saying that law firm who didn't pay us our referral fee converted our money. Same
okay.
situation is here.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, you may proceed.
Your Honor, you indicated that the parties contracted for a brief reason decision, and you didn't get an answer.
Could you speak up, counsel?
You did not get. Thank you, Your Honor. You did not get an answer to your question of how the original arbitration award was reasoned. There hasn't been one. I didn't try the case, but I've been involved in this all the way through the proceedings. No party has been able to address that. I'll defer here. Judge Drain could not address that. When I explained to Judge Drain during the hearing the dangers of going down this road and whether he should even inquire of the arbitrators whether they had notes, whether they still had the exhibits, there was no transcript, he refused to go down that road. So I want to stress to the panel, if I may, that if you go down the road of unflagging respect for clarification without the requisite ambiguity, that pretty soon you will lose functus officio. It'll be gone. There's a recent case that came down. I don't know if this is proper, but I can give you a cite. It's not from this circuit, though. And
you can give it to us.
Thank you, Your Honors. It's September 8, 2021, Verizon, Pennsylvania versus Communication Workers of America. The citation is 13 Fed 4300, and it's a Third Circuit case, as I indicated. And note 18 makes the very point that I just described. In that case, they went down the road of functus officio. They found that the original award was not capable of clarification, that there was no ambiguity, and that if indeed it was remanded back, it would basically, the exception would swallow up the rule. And the point that I'd like to stress, and I know I said it earlier, but I do want to end on this point, is this is a question of the power of the arbitrators to move forward. And if they do not have power, whatever they do thereafter, to mix metaphors, is the fruits of the poisonous tree.
And so your remedy here would be to send it, to vacate it and send it to a completely new panel of arbitrators, so you'd go around it again?
Or back to the district court for a jury trial. Yes.
Why would that be? Wouldn't the underlying agreement to arbitration still stand?
Well, there was a claim that there was a breach of the underlying agreement for a breach of confidentiality. So whether I will tell you, Your Honor, regardless of whether it's a new panel or it goes back to Judge Drain for a trial, the relief is appropriate, because right now, and I'll end it on this point, I see my time is up. It is interesting that when the arbitrators asked for reasoned decisions, that, as Mr. Tyler said, we did not give one to the arbitrators, and he did. We felt that the arbitrators did not have the power to act on those reasoned decisions, resulting in the supplemental arbitration award. It also ratifies the fact that they didn't have the institutional memory they needed to issue the supplemental decision that they did.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The case will be submitted.